Good morning, everyone, once again. It's our privilege to bring the loving greetings of your brethren of the Southwest Bible Students of the Phoenix area, especially my wife, Sister Barbara, who would love to have been here, but is entertaining her parents this week, Brother Art and Sister Esther Ledwinka, who also sent their love, and the Mundells also wanted their love sent to the class, and particularly to the Grays. We're going to talk on some verses in Revelation, so a little bit of departure from the first two discourses. We're going to look at some prophecy. And as you know, the book of Revelation is written for the John class. That's who this book was designed for by the Lord, for us at this time, the day of the Lord that we are living in. So it's of much importance to us because of fulfillment of much of the book. Of course, the seventh stage of the church is now. Now, Revelation 7, 1-3 is one of those scriptures, there are not many, that describe events that will immediately lead up to and follow the completion of the church when the saints are sealed in the foreheads and the church is complete and the door is closed. So it's a very important prophecy for us to consider. Our thoughts are not original. Our study for this subject basically is Brother Russell's writings, although not much about it in the reprints, but there are some references, and also our dear Brother Gene Burns, who we respect highly on Revelation study. So let's open our Bibles to Revelation 7, and we're going to read from the New American Standard Version. I'll read three verses, the first three verses. And again, Revelation 7, if you look at the where it is in the book, it's kind of sandwiched in between the sixth seal and the seventh seal. Kind of like a parenthetical story here between the sixth and seventh seal. In the New American Standard, it calls it the interlude or the parenthesis between these two periods. All right, the scripture reads, "After this I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding back the four winds of the earth, so that no wind blow on the earth or on the sea or any tree. Then I saw another angel ascending from the rising of the sun, having the seal of the living God, and he cried out with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was granted to harm the earth and the sea, saying, Do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees, until we have sealed the bondservants of our God on their foreheads." And the next verse says there were 144,000 sealed. Bible students have read and studied these verses all during this gospel age harvest that we are still in. The search continues to decipher its meaning. We don't claim to have the full answer to this puzzle, but we continue to search the scriptures, as I know you do. Our task today is to define the key symbolic meanings of these verses as an introduction to further study, discussion, and dialogue. Indeed, Revelation is written in symbolic language. There are some literal passages, but for the most part, it is a book of signs and symbols, as told us in the very first chapter of Revelation. So to understand the teachings of Revelation, we attempt first to decode the symbols used before understanding the story, the metaphors, and the prophetic teachings of the book. So our attention is first drawn to three sets of fours. Four angels, four winds, and four corners of the earth. Now we know from the book of Daniel that the number four is a symbolic number for universality. For instance, the four beasts of Daniel, the seventh chapter, symbolize the four universal Gentile governments of Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. And in Daniel 7, it is the four winds of heaven that are responsible for the creation of four beasts. Daniel 7, 2-3. "I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four beasts were coming up from the sea, and they were all different one from another. These four winds were found in Daniel's time, striving upon the sea. They were not carrying the same labels as now. Any religion that could control the people was all that was necessary. In yesteryear, it seems the winds were prevented from reaching whirlwind proportions by allowing each of the four winds a turn at religious power in the successive four empires of Babylon the lion, Medo-Persia the bear, Greece the leopard, and the last, the dreadful and terrifying and strong beast of Rome. It was not only Satan who wanted power, but the evil spirits also wanted to try their hand at religion in world government. A compromise was reached that allowed a certain rotation of power, although Satan always bullied them. And you'll, in the book of Revelation, you will notice the term Prince of Persia and Prince of Greece. We believe these were fallen angels who were these princes. And you remember Gabriel even fought with one of them and detained until Michael came and helped him overcome that prince. One of these princes of these four universal empires. I think it was the Prince of Persia that was the battle with Gabriel. Sometimes we think evil spirits contented themselves with possessing people, as recorded in the New Testament when our Lord relieved the people, the demons, by casting them out of the people, or in seances, rappings, and tappings. But they also, these evil spirits, strove to control the minds of men and nations. They enchanted the minds of people with false religion, even as Satan has done in the development of the mother of harlots and her daughters. All false religions have appeals to various levels of people. To the noble-minded, false religion has religious philosophy that can be very high-sounding. To the baser elements, they can appeal to sensuality. To others, to superstition and fear. The important thing to remember is that the demons are involved in more than witchcraft. They are eager for power and glory and honor, just as Satan and false religion is their modus operandi. And you remember before the flood, it was the angels that were in charge of the earth. The second world, the prince, Satan, is the prince of this world. And then the third world will be Christ, and his church will be the rulers. So these evil spirits have had experience with ruling or trying to rule peoples and nations before. And they're still at it. Now, as long as Israel was God's kingdom on earth, the Gentile nations had no hope of any universal dominion. The nations were fragmented, and the Lord apparently did not allow any one nation to have world dominion. After all, it was God that confused the tongues to disperse the peoples at the Tower of Babel. When the Lord was about to take away Israel as his kingdom nation, these four winds of heaven that we read from Daniel 7:2 were stirring upon the great sea. And the sea is a symbol of the restless humanity, not under any control, but seeking their needs through whatever channel they can find. Now, out of this striving upon the sea of these four winds, out of this, there arose these four beastly governments we talked about. We think the Lord allowed each of these four winds some representation in the four universal empires. The demons were represented heavily in the first three world dominions of Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece, especially the false religions of those empires. And, of course, you know, Paul battled with these false doctrines in his time, in the end of the Jewish harvest, that had their beginning way before, during the dominion of earth of the Grecian Empire and the idols that they set up as part of this false religion system that Greece set up. Satan dominates the last dominion, or the Roman Empire, the largest and the cruelest of all. And you remember in Romans, or in Revelation 12:9, the dragon of Rome is called the devil and Satan. All right, that's the four winds of heaven, based on description of the book of Daniel. Now the four corners of the earth that we read, the second set of four. The world is shaping up into the following four quarters or segments of world power. The following observation is a tentative one and needs to be watched carefully to see how these winds will be unleashed in whirlwind strength. But here's the four corners of the earth as it looks right now. And we have to think globally now, not just the nation of Israel, not just the United States, but globally. Number one, first corner of the earth. These are the capitalistic forces in alleged Christian nations such as the Europe, United States, and trying to form a community of nations is Canada, Mexico, and South America. So that's the more or less capitalistic type countries. Corner number two, the Far Eastern bloc of nations, which would include India, Japan, who practice Hindu and Shinto religion primarily, with Republican representative forms of government. Number three, the anti-imperialistic forces of Middle East and Africa. Number four, the Eastern bloc of humanists and pagans under the Commonwealth of Russia, China, and North Korea. Now, the four winds of heaven are again striving and vying for control over these four segments of society. Each wind describes dominance in world government. Islam is not just a religion wanting you to believe their religion. They want world dominance. They want a world government that's Islam. That's true of all these other false religions. Each wind desires dominance in world government, just as these four winds in Daniel strove for control with some sort of compromise which averted a whirlwind. For instance, in China and India, the fastest growing religion is Muslim, and right behind it is humanistic atheism. They're growing. Christianity is not growing in these countries. Now, the world is more complicated by finance, technology, science, industry, and military power. Compromises are more difficult. There are other players in the world area, but apparently the same four winds of heaven are at work again, only more refined and sharply honed, seeking for dominance and world power. What are the four winds of earth? The switch in the metaphor from four winds of heaven in Daniel to the four winds of earth in Revelation, why the switch? It's not an insignificant difference. The difference is not so much in the winds, but the way in which they are directed, whether toward the mental processes, which we call spiritual, or whether the winds are trying to influence the control of the earth or the social order. We believe the winds of heaven are the spirit world's involvement in false religion. This then becomes a tool to exercise spiritual control over the minds of the people. Today there are great world religions which are more than metal or stone idols. They are formed into world religion such as Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, Brahmin, Shinto, and now New Age and the like, which control and subjugate countless millions of Earth's population. False religions, present and past, make up the winds of heaven. When Montezuma was crowned king, he had 5,000 people sacrificed. That was part of the festivities. In pre-Columbian Latin America, 50,000 were garroted and eviscerated on the same day and in the same place. This is how the demon gods were assuaged. The Ottoman Turks attempted to liquidate all Armenians, no doubt for the praise of Islam's Allah. Even in our time, there was the final solution of the Jews, in which almost 5 million innocents were incarcerated if not with the cooperation of Christian churches, at least with their consent. The list goes on and on of this hall of shame, which traces man's inhumanity to hand in the name of false religion. Now, Paul warned against being tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive, Ephesians 4:4. When these winds blow in the spiritual realm, they are winds of heaven. When they blow in to control earth or civil matters, they are the winds of earth. In other words, when religious teachings are calculated to motivate world politics, to influence the social order, they cease to be heaven winds, and they become earth winds. Remember, the earth is a symbol of stabilized society, made up, usually the society we think of in terms of social, religious, economic, and political. The four winds of heaven have been pretty content so far, just promoting their philosophy in the heaven or spiritual, the mind, and they've been quite content with that. Well, when they start trying to influence the social order, laws, politically, to enact laws, let's say, to make some religions not illegal and some legal, then they're becoming winds of the earth. That's talked about in Revelation 7. Now, Brother Russell said the four angels were agents. We need not think literal angels or powerful spiritual hosts are sent from heaven to hold the four winds of earth. Rather, any messenger or message serving to restrain these spiritual powers would suffice to fulfill this prophecy. Remember, there are four angels that hold back the four winds. Brother Russell's thought was that these were agents, not necessarily angels or men. Could be the message itself that's the agent. The present Lord has given each of these competing religious segments a long leash. As long as they are running along toward their goals, there is no reason to kick up a storm. Their very freedom and success keeps them from turning toward world destruction. They read the message of their success and freedom as being a good reason to show restraint. Why cause trouble when you're having success? So each wind of earth is matched with one angel or message. For instance, as long as the Islamic religion is gaining influence and growing peacefully, which it is today in the Western world, why confront fundamental Protestants with their religious differences? But if Islam starts to feel threatened by Protestant assaults or attacks, its angel or message will spring into action to no longer restrain itself in just having spiritual influence, but will seek action directly in the earth by driving control of the social and the political systems of the world. Now, in the end, which of these four winds of earth is going to be the one that's going to survive? Well, we believe the answer to that is Revelation 16. The four winds of earth, as best we can perceive, are Western Christian world, Roman Catholic, and mainly the Protestant churches, the Far Eastern world, the Muslim world, and pagan humanists. Who of these four contenders will gain geopolitical predominance? Revelation 16:13 makes it clear that at the time of Armageddon, crash, or whirlwind, it is the dragon, Roman civil power, the beast, Roman religious power, and its closely allied daughter, the false prophet, Protestants under the direction of the Church of England, working with the Mother Church. These are also described as Herod, Herodias, and Salome. Here will be unleashed the cataclysmic forces of Armageddon, when the other contenders for power finally realize that they have lost out. Then they will vent their fury in creating the whirlwind, or the anarchy stage of the time of trouble. But this will not happen until all the saints have been sealed in their foreheads. What's the sealing of the forehead? I think the best answer is in Revelation 14, verse 1, NAS version. Then I looked, and behold, the Lamb was standing on Mount Zion with him, 144,000, having his name and the name of his Father written on their foreheads. Brethren, having the name of the Son and the Father is very special. What that means is having character so crystallized in both the heart and the mind of those that God will accept into His divine family, that their character is so developed that it is crystallized with the character of the Son and the Father, whose character are the same, crystallized. That's your 144,000 sealed. They too will have this crystallization. We'll have to have this crystallization of character in order to be sealed with this name of the Father and the Son in the forehead. I hope this short discussion will stimulate further study, discussion, as we keep a watchful eye on the fulfillment of prophecy leading up to Armageddon and what we all have been hoping for, the completion of the church class. For references, I'll give, if you want to read Brother Russell's thoughts, reprint 5470, 4880, 4822, and question book 737, paragraph 1.
Thank you, Brother Ron. As a transition to our testimony meeting, to be led by Brother Slavinsky, we're going to have the singing of hymn number 267. And while we're getting ready for that, we will... boy. Is that right? Yep. Oops. What color was the paper? Yellow.
Yellow.
What happened to it? That's a program. We had love from some brethren online that I was going to read, but we'll find it. It couldn't have gone too far from there to here. Hymn number 267.